Hey, it's Brian. Coming up today on the Work and Sports Podcast, David Plotty, University of Colorado Associate Athletic Director and Sports Information Director. We're talking all about the business behind the scenes in college athletics and how he identifies traits in people that lead to sports career success. But first, talking about success, we want you to be successful in your sports career, and one of the ways we do that is through our new online courses, the Work in Sports Academy. We've created four different online courses, which include videos, articles, downloadable worksheets, cheat sheets, checklists, and more to help you become an expert at getting hired. Everyone needs to get better at building their network of contacts, right? Well, we have a course for that. What about interviewing skills? We have a course for that. Resume, cover letter, personal brand. Yes, we've got that covered. Gaining the right experience and skills. Got that too. Our courses have my best stuff, my best advice and information pulled from the hundreds of interviews I've done with sports executives and my 20 years of experience. So come check it out. workinsports.com/gameplan. One more time, workinsports.com/gameplan. All right, let's start the countdown.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hi, everybody. I'm Brian Clapp, Vice President of Content and Engaged Learning at workinsports.com, and this is the Work in Sports Podcast. Getting a new boss can be one of the scariest moments of your career. Whether you like your boss or not, you've come to know them. Their actions are predictable. You know how they will react to certain stimulus, what they expect, how they operate. You may not always agree. You may not always see eye to eye, but at least you know what's coming. A new boss is the unknown. They could be great, but they could be awful. There's a feeling out process. You have to prove yourself all over again. And in truth, most new bosses like to bring in their own people, people they know, that they have a level of familiarity with. And that means their people might be coming in to replace you. Anxiety is everywhere. When I first left CNN and headed to Fox Sports in Seattle, my first 2 months, I kept thinking to myself, man, I wish I had someone here I knew and trusted. It was a whole new staff, all new people. I knew no one, right? I wish I had one of my people around me to rely on, help me teach and train my new staff the way I expected things to be done. At that time, I didn't consider the fear going through my new staff. They were probably feeling as challenged as I was, wondering how best to work with me, wondering if I was going to start firing people or replacing them with my people. There's stress on both sides of the equation. Anxiety in the building is palpable when major change happens. My GM at the time told me, the routine when a new person comes in, like you, he's speaking to me, is you fire an anchor or two and bring in new people to freshen things up. You fire a few producers and bring in your people you trust. And then you bring in a few lower level people and give them a chance to grow. They're your people again, so that you've embedded your people at different levels of the organization. And then he paused and he said, let's not do that this time. My GM liked and trusted the staff that was in place. He wanted me to help them grow, not just remove and replace them, which I appreciated. But unfortunately, that is not the norm. Generally speaking, new people come in and they bring their old people with them. Change is a certainty, which is exactly why today's guest, David Plotty, is even more impressive than his resume. He's worked under 5 different athletic directors. At no time did an AD come in and say, let's replace this guy. I want to bring in my own person. He's worked under 9 different head football coaches. At no time did they say, I want to bring in my own person and replace David. Sure, we can list the accomplishments on his resume. He's worked or covered over 2,200 CU sports events. He's worked 5 BCS national championship games, all 5 college football playoff title games, 8 Rose Bowls, 2 Fiesta Bowls, and in the pros on his own spare time, he's worked 398 Denver Bronco games and has been the Rockies' official scorer for over 320 games. And if that wasn't enough, he also just earned a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Football Writers Association of America and was named to the Hall of Fame at COSITA, which is the College Sports Information Directors Association. But at the end of the day, he made himself irreplaceable every day. People wanted him to stay, demanded that he stay. That is the kind of loyalty and commitment we should all strive for. Here's the Hall of Famer, David Plotty. Hi, David. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for jumping on this call and getting into the subject of sports information and media relations and so many of the different fields you've worked in your career at the University of Colorado. So you've had this long and storied career in college athletics. You've filled many roles in the athletic department, sports information, media relations, associate athletic director, and you teach as an adjunct instructor. Let's go back to your beginning a bit, go back a little bit and understand what was your kind of why. Why did you get into college sports? Why was it the right fit for you? And what is it that makes that environment so special?
Truth be told, it's because I hurt my knee playing high school football. And the coach knew I wanted to be involved with the team somehow, so he asked me if I wanted to keep stats or be the statistician or be like a team trainer. And no offense to trainers anywhere, but I really wasn't into taping my friend's feet, so I opted for the statistician job. And I'd already been a numbers geek anyway, so I always had a love for stats, especially baseball stats, and was keeping our basketball team stats, so I said, sure, I can do that. And that just turned over into doing more things in high school. I was actually, my senior project was being a sports information director for my senior year at spring. Got a little staff, and we did little newsletters, and I came to college. I knew I was going to be on the stat crew at Colorado, but I really didn't know what sports information was at that time, and started working in the athletic department, as most people in the business, and pro and college. Almost all of us got our start working as a student assistant in the SID office in college.
Well, that's good to know, and that's important information for everyone to have. Well, let's talk about that, though. When you attended CU as a student, you had some high-level experience. You were the information director for the Rocky Mountain Athletic Conference. You worked for the Colorado Golf Association and for the Rocky Mountain News. Those are things that will stand out on your resume to anybody, an experience you gained that probably gave you more confidence entering the industry full bore once you graduated. How did you get some of those experience? And do those type of experiences still exist today for students, or is it harder to come by?
Well, I was fortunate to have a boss at the time at CU, Tim Simmons, who was pretty well connected throughout the state. So he was responsible for landing me many of those gigs. And I probably had 7 or 8 other things. You know, I did the Harlem Globetrotters PR when they came to Denver, which was like a
nice
3-day deal 3 years in a row. And all I had to do was hand out tickets to radio stations and get Meadowlark Lemon on the air. So that was pretty easy. But what I still tell my students today is, if you want to be ahead of everybody else, if you want to get into this business, and probably most business in athletics is while you're a college student, try to build your resume then. You'll be ahead of almost everybody else, because we still get calls today from people that want to do these things, but they just have no experience. And I'm sorry, you don't want to burst their bubble, but because you've got so many kids that have been doing this during their college career, building their resumes like that, don't be afraid to develop that work ethic, because that's what we're going to notice. So going back to when I was a freshman, we had a gentleman called Irv Brown, who's a referee. He was used to be our baseball coach. He was a director of fundraising. And he literally told me to do everything I could during college, whether it paid or not, to build my resume. And I followed that advice.
I think that's genius advice. And I'm amazed all the time when I have students that graduate college and then come to me or someone like me and say, okay, so now what do I do? How do I get a job? And I'm like, you're about 4 years late, you know, in a lot of ways gaining that experience. So that's the most.
You don't want to burst their bubble necessarily, but the realistic part of it is, I get a lot, well, I took this class or I majored in this, and it's like, that's not real world experience. And yeah, it was fun for you to go off to Europe for 6 months after you graduated, but that means you're 6 months further behind.
Yep.
And there's nothing wrong with people doing that, but the issue is, in our business, there's a finite number of jobs. It's not like if you want to be an accountant, there's 75,000 jobs across the country, if not 3 or 4 times that. There's really probably counting assistants and directors and maybe some offshoots that are not necessarily with a sports team or college, probably 2,000 to 2,500 sports PR jobs.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a harsh reality. And fact is, I get, I'll have other people who message me and maybe they share their resume or maybe they tell me a little bit about themselves and they've got incredible amount of experience. They've done something every year, maybe two times a year. They've volunteered, they've done different informational interview sessions, they've, you know, been involved in their athletic department. And you're like, okay, this person gets it. You know, you just see that desire and that knowledge to push themselves further.
Yeah, and it's not saying the others are lazy by any means. They just didn't either get some advice or didn't have the foresight to do that.
Yep.
And then they're usually nice people, but when somebody's done so many things, when you're matching them against somebody that hasn't done much, who's going to be the winner there?
Exactly right. So let's circle this back a little bit too. Over your career, you've had a lot of different student assistants working with you, hundreds, and a lot of them have gone on to work full time in sports information or media relations, college teams, professional teams. They're out there. These are people that came through you in a way. No one knows better what it takes to make a successful employee in your side of the industry. So what's the pattern? What have you noticed the common traits or the look of success or whatever you want to call it? What have you noticed in the people that have kind of come through you that you know that they're going to go on to be successful or have found success?
Number one would be work ethic. Number 1A would be they're inquisitive, their desire to come to you quite often saying, is there anything else I can do besides what we've assigned them? And the key thing there is those students earn our trust pretty quick. So they're going to be like our go-to group. I've got anywhere between 12 and 14 assistants any given year. And there's four or five that are, you know, the go-to group. There's the next four that are okay. They're not bad. And then the last four like working in sports, but they really have no desire to go on in the business. They might be business majors or political science or whatever, but they want to be involved just doing something around sports, but they don't want to do it for a living. And you need people like that, too, to answer phones, be press box runners, gather quotes. You know, they're all valuable. So that's what the breakdown's usually been. So of those four or five top ones, you know, I think I've got four in the NFL currently right now. I've had, you know, probably 8 to 10 in the past. You know, the biggest name of the group would be Chris Fowler, who worked for us, but obviously he went on in TV and radio. But because he was working athletics, we were able to expose him to some of the TV people in Denver, and then he bagged some internships in Denver doing that. And then, lo and behold, he's 2 years out of college, and he landed this Scholastic Sports America gig on ESPN. So, you know, we count him among our proud alumni, even though he didn't really go into sports information.
I used to love Scholastic Sports America. That was one of my favorite shows growing up by far. And, yeah, of course, everybody knows who Chris Fowler is. I think it's really fascinating there that you put that that curiosity or that intrigue. I remember when I was coming up in college or even in my early career at CNN Sports Illustrated, a lot of times I thought like asking questions or being inquisitive was a sign of, like, this was just my mentality as a 20-year-old, that it was a sign of weakness. Like, I didn't know everything and I was afraid to ask questions. And it's like the further I've gone in my career, you realize that it's the exact opposite. You know, the more inquisitive you are, the more curious you are, the more, you know, attuned to the information that's going on in front of you are, that sets the right impression with the people that you're going to be working with.
Sure. That's exactly the good point, is that the ones that stand out are the ones that ask questions, the ones that are not looking at the clock, the ones that are on time. You know, they're not 5 or 10 minutes late for their office hour. They're always there on time.
Yep.
They are willing to stay late. They're willing to work nights. They're willing to work weekends. They don't come up with excuses that, oh, I've got a frat party to go to. You know, it's a sorority. You know, I mean, they got their formal. That's a different deal. But, you know, they aren't making excuses of why they're not there. They don't call in sick all the time when they're probably hungover,
right.
Which is a form of sickness, I admit that. But, you know, you know right away, you can tell pretty quickly who excuse makers are.
Yeah.
You know, the victim playing, you know, how many times can your car break down in 4 years, you know?
Right. How many grandmothers do you have?
Things like that.
So one of your main roles in sports information, you're focused on football, skiing, men's golf. You've pretty much worked on every team at CU at some point during your career. But what is the process like? Take us through the day-to-day response. And I know there's no day-to-day that are the same, but how do things kind of line up for an SID? How would you characterize your most important things you need to get done and how you represent the teams and how you interact with the media and all the things that go into being an SID?
I define the job sometimes as a rut that's never the same, because the the student athletes circle out or switch out every 4 years. We have a different batch every 4 years. And, you know, coaches, quite often the same, maybe not for the best reason in the world if they've been let go. But because the personalities change, the job is essentially the same of what you've got to do each year. Things get added to it, like the latest big addition, of course, has been social media aspects to it. But there's very little we did like in 1985 that we don't still have to do in 2019. It's just been augmented. You know, we've got the, I tell people all the time, whoever invented the PDF should be a billionaire. You save on postage, you get news out quicker to your national media. Same thing with email. So there's been some great improvements, but you still have to do the work ahead of it. You know, maybe what you don't have to do is supervise your students on a Sunday afternoon stuffing 500 envelopes. That's gone away.
Yeah.
But, you know, the average day would be, it really depends on the season you've got. Like in football season, it's, I wouldn't say it's 24-7, but quite often it's 16-18-7.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you've got the game day. If it's a night game, you're probably still in the press box by noon. Game kicks off at 6. You're not out of the press box till well after midnight. You know, most SIDs leave one person in the box till the last writer's out. And, you know, with the augment of all bloggers and internet media and fan site, things like that, we're not really on deadline. You know, they sometimes stay in the press box till 3 or 4 a.m. So game days can be the longest that you have all year. Same thing with basketball, when almost all the games are at night anyway. The basketball SID is not getting out of there until midnight or later. So once again, it goes back to you better not be a clock watcher, because that doesn't fit this profession. During the week, you know, we arrange interviews, we write news releases, coordinate media training sessions where you school the athlete on, you know, tips on how to be good with the media. We're a school. We don't sit in on interviews. You know, I like to let the person sink or swim, because, quite honestly, media doesn't burn college kids. So to sit there and try to, you know, play yes or no, or, you know, what lawyers do with politicians, don't answer that question. We don't do that.
Yeah.
So, but we do the media guides. We have to maintain the records, the record books. So one of the worst things in the world in our profession is if you miss a record. And there was a SID here in the 50s who always felt bad, because we had a running back finish his career, believe it or not, with 1,999 yards.
Oh, no.
And the last game he played was at Kansas State. He carried the ball 10 times for 238 yards. He probably could have gained one more yard with one more carry, but he wasn't aware that he had hit 1999 and felt bad that he couldn't get him the 1 yard just so he could be a 2,000-yard rusher.
Oh, man. I'm sure there's hundreds of stories you have like that over the years of your expertise at CU and everything you've seen come and go. One of the things that strikes me is that, I mean, you mentioned how things are the same. A lot of the things are the same since 1985 until now. But has analytics and the overarching goal of so many people to be data driven, has that changed anything for you guys? I mean, more and more journalists are using their advanced metrics to tell their stories and provide analysis, teams and scouts. Has this added emphasis on the data affected the role of the SID, or is it kind of still maintained its own normal way?
Not so much. I can't speak for every school, but that is really more infiltrated all the pro sports right now. I think there are some data analytics going on. I mean, we do have a person that does that, but, you know, a lot of that is more really in the ticketing area or marketing components that they try to look at that kind of data. It hasn't spilled really over to somebody, you know, trying to figure out, you know, what this team does on 3rd and 10 every time. That's actually been ingrained in some of the computer programs that football uses tied to their video system. So that hasn't affected SIDs per se. But, you know, I could see it coming at some point. But I think a lot of that in college would really be on the coaching side of things. And, you know, I see it. I'm an official scorer for the Rockies, as you know. And
yeah.
I don't see the PR guys having to deal with the analytics much, because that's really in the baseball operations side.
That makes sense. So the Football Writers Association of America has 3 times awarded CU Sports Information for outstanding press box operation, and 5 times with the Super 11 Award for all-encompassing efforts with the nation's football media. Those are pretty great awards, if you ask me. What do you think? How would you define
the same thing, really, so it's really eight
I know,
times.
I was kind of reading that, and I was like, all-encompassing efforts?
They changed the name of it a while ago.
Yeah, all-encompassing efforts versus outstanding press box operation. It seems like it's pretty similar, but nonetheless, it's an award, and you earned it. So what makes a good press box operation, and how have you gained this reputation amongst your peers? How did you guys get to this point?
Really, it's just doing a job working with the media, and mostly on game days. You know, access to the coaches, access to the players. And, you know, a lot of it, you know, is out of our hands. You've got schools where coaches will, hey, the only players available for interviews this week are these two guys for half an hour on Tuesdays. They don't make the assistant coaches available. I haven't had a head coach that's been that protective of the coaches or players because he understands it's part of the education process. They need to learn to sink or swim on their own. They make an error, they learn from it. You know, if it's a controversial type thing, we'll counsel them. But by and large, what you see with what we do is the access that we give the media is a plus for us in these awards. Game day, it's just doing good stuff in the press box. We do great game notes. We do great pregame notes and postgame notes, rather. In our case, my sports bar caters the press box, so my co-owner loves to shower the press with different things and actually sometimes stays after the game and actually cooks hot wings for him in the press box. So you score a few points by feeding them well.
Yes, you do.
But, you know, it still comes down to what you do with the quotes we type after the games, the access they get during the weekend. And on game day, you know, there are teams that will trot out three or four players but won't let other players be interviewed. They hear the four we're giving the after today's game. So we take requests. We'll somebody who doesn't come to the postgame press conference, we have people go and get them and bring them out for those needs. So it's just a real combination of working with the media and trying to satisfy everything they ask for on game day.
It's funny, having spent most of my career in various press boxes and in reporting situations and whatnot, I will say it always comes down to the food that's available and the transparency and availability. It's really what it comes down to. We're a simple breed.
Exactly. You know, and you just meet the requests that are manageable, and you don't meet every request, obviously. At times there are different things you can't do, but by and large, you know, it's college athletics, they're college kids, they're usually not going to get burned.
Yeah, it's true. So you've worked over 460 football games and been a member of the Denver Broncos stats crew since 1980. You talked about the long days that happen in the press box. You talked about pregame notes and postgame notes and, you know, all those sort of things that go into it. But like, how break down a little bit more of what goes on game day. So noon, that's a long time before a game. What goes into that process of getting ready for the game and then finishing things up?
Probably the simplest thing is taping down the name tags on the seats so the press knows where they're sitting.
It's always important.
But, you know, that involves, you know, you're taping down 150 tags or so, so you got to have some students, got to have a lot of tape. So that's usually the first thing we do. We haul up the game notes. We gather the notes from the opponent. Programs are delivered because we stuff the notes in programs and hand those out to each seat. At that point, we're just kind of there being troubleshooters. Media comes in early. Some people come in early to write advanced stories. Some people just like getting there early, so they have to deal with traffic and parking. So they'll open the press box usually 3 to 5 hours before the game, depending on the magnitude of the game. So there's some idle time prior. During the game, it's the big thing is the stat crew getting notes out. If something happens, you get on the PA system and announce this player just did X, this team just accomplished Y, announce the attendance eventually. Passing out play-by-plays, we type the play-by-play and we pass that out after each quarter. Quarter quickie stats, halftime stats, things like that. Post-game, we put together the stat book, which is basically everything we've handed out plus all the final stat pages. Same time, we're running the post-game press conference down outside the locker room, gathering the players. Kids will you know, get 5 or 6 kids that do quotes. They come back up to the press box and they'll type the quotes up either themselves or we'll have some of the other kids serve as quote typists. Then we're there basically to answer questions more than anything, probably what we do outside of the stat operation.
I would imagine with so many assistants that you bring in each year and the turnover you must have as students come and go, you have to do a lot of training and just getting people up to speed so that they can perform during the main events that are going on. How hard is that process for you? How hard is it to continually be training and teaching and working with a new group of students each time?
It sometimes has its challenges, but because same kind of deal, the turnover is a completely different crew over 4 years. But, you know, what's really good is you have students that are senior student assistant, so to speak. So they kind of help in training the younger kids on here's what I did when I had that role. We meet with them at the start of the year saying, here's what you're doing, here's what you need to do to find their role to them and the responsibilities that go with those. But we count a lot on the upperclassmen students to help out as well. So, unless you have a whole lot of newbies, which, if you manage the office properly, that shouldn't happen. We get maybe four or five new kids each year. And they get the, you'd say, at bottom of the totem pole type jobs. You know, you're going to be the runner to the field with the photo film. You're going to be the runner in the press box handing out the pages. And then you graduate from there. But that's another way where I said earlier, you earn our trust. Is if you're really good at something, we notice it right away, then we'll elevate you. If you slack off handing off a piece of paper, well, you're probably not going to win a trust very quickly.
That's so true, and I hope everybody listening will really let that sink in for a second. I know early in my career or in internships, I was given opportunities to earn trust, and I looked at it like it was not necessarily the best challenge that I was being given, so maybe I didn't put my all into it. And you're sending a message when you do that, right? When you put your all into every little step that is important, it shows and sends a message to the people that are above you that you are capable and confident and willing to do whatever it takes to get through, and that's an important message to send.
Definitely. And like I say, go right back to work ethic and trust. And, if you show us right off the bat that you're eager, you want to learn, you're not just satisfied with what we give you, you're going to stand out. And that probably applies to most professions and most college intern type jobs that are around there. And anymore, if you want to get a job in the pros, there are kids or young adults now that are bouncing around from team to team doing internships, and they might do three or four internships with that many different teams before a full-time job opens up. It goes back to our finite number of jobs in the business. A lot of people like it. Now, some people get into it and realize, oh my God, I can't handle these hours. I want to have a family, or I do have a family already, and I feel I'm not doing justice to my kids. And people will exit that way, too. So, once again, you got to set work ethic and figure out if you have a family, you got to figure out that work balance, work and family balance.
You're often that main liaison between the media and the athletic department, especially as it comes to football. How important is it? We talked about building trust and people living up to their expectations and all those different things from your student ambassadors working with you. But what about with the media? And what about with the local people that are covering your teams and even the bloggers and whatever else? How important is it for you to establish trust in that relationship as well? And know that things are going to be reported in the right way, or how do you do that?
Someone once said that our currency is our credibility, and everybody spins things at times. There's a difference between spinning and lying. Sarah Sanders was accused of lying all the time. Well, she was spinning and not lying. Obviously, your boss tells you something, you put it out there, and it turns out to be true. That's really not on that person. But if you're caught in a lie that really is something that you have control of, you can lose trust with the media pretty quickly. So, and it's hard to build that back up. So that's the biggest thing in building relationships, is just have to be honest. Another great quote I had was from Jim Sacamano from the Denver Broncos, is probably one of the best PR directors ever to come down the pike. His favorite line was, "I'm not telling you all I know, I'm telling you all I can." And I think most media people appreciate that, because there are times you're not cleared to tell everybody something, whether it's something's not ready to be announced, whether you're waiting for the contracts to be signed, you can't really talk about it. So that's why you have to go into that situation at times, that you can't always reveal everything, because there are other people above you in the food chain that are controlling when something needs to be announced. Now, in this day and age, things leak all the time on the internet and social media, and you can't prevent that. I mean, 10 years ago, people were waiting on signing day for you to put out there who is your official signing list, or commits now. Kids announce they've committed to a school on Twitter. So the media goes to Twitter and follows programs that way too, by seeing who were associated with what they're saying on Twitter. And, when somebody says something on Twitter, it's hard to deny it's true or false. So right. you have to deal with that.
Yeah. I read a quote from former CU football coach Dan Hawkins about you, and he said, and don't blush, but I'm going to say some nice things here. Administrators, coaches, professors, students, they all come and go, but Dave has been there longer than them all. He's an institution. He's so passionate about Colorado and dedicated to his work. He's a grinder. He gets the job done, and he does it with professionalism, and excellence. So there's like three words that really stick out to me in there: professionalism, excellence, being a grinder. Are those the attributes that you see in yourself? And would you say those are the things that have gotten you where you are in your career and would recommend them to those young people out there?
I'm a grinder.
That's what it says. That's what he said.
Yeah, I guess I am. Yeah, it's the, I guess that's a nice way of saying workaholic.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But it's true. I mean, cause I'm single, you know, I never got married. Did the old try to outkick the coverage and kick the ball into the center's butt. yeah, so instead of watching TV at home, I'd work later and just do some things. And the one positive / negative with me is I've got such a creative mind at times that I'll delve into a project that will take time right in the middle of when I got other stuff going on. But something that fascinates me, I want to go and research, and I'll do that. So, and so it's always something historical with CU. So right now I'm doing the media guide, and got off on a tangent. Is how come no one's done a page of score by quarters each year, so you can see the first quarter for the last 75 years and second quarter, things like that. So that took a day and a half to do that, but I wanted to see it, so I did it. So I guess, Coach Hawk was one of my biggest fans, and a coach I sincerely respect, and unfortunately it didn't work out for him here. But as most coaches will tell you, if you get into this business, you're going to get fired at some point.
Yep, you get hired to get fired. But still, being told that you're, professionalism, excellence, and being a grinder, those are pretty nice compliments from a guy to give you.
Oh, totally. No, yeah. Totally. It humbles me, and I respect it. So.
Yeah, for sure.
Go talk.
Well, we'll finish up with this. This year, you've been named to the COSITA, which is the College Sports Information Directors Association. You've been named to their Hall of Fame and received the Football Writers Association of America Lifetime Achievement Award. As you kind of reflect back on all you've accomplished in college athletics, do you have a thing that you are most proud of?
Well, first of all, those are awards that demand great age.
Longevity.
One of my old bosses said that when he was a historian. He said historian's a title that demands great age. But no, they're humbling honors. I mean, there's so many people in the business that have worked, for years. It's you're kind of humbled and embarrassed because there's some people out there that are equally, if not more, deserving than you to win these kind of things. And COSITA, I've been obviously an SID now since 1984, so that's a lot of years and put in one profession. And I only left my alma mater for 6 months during my senior year to work with a minor league baseball team, but my entire professional life after college has been at CU since January of 1983. So, longevity shouldn't necessarily earn you an award. You've got to figure out some way to break from the pack. And I think in my instance, that's been a combination of my statistical background, my creativity background, and using whatever history I can find to match. One of my coolest notes I ever had was back in the mid-80s that CU was 20-0 in football when Halley's Comet was visible from Earth. that's out there. I got a CU Buff football player has made one of the three longest road trips in human history. Who was he and what did he do? Well, that was Jack Swigert, who was on Apollo 13.
That's great.
Where the moon was that particular time, it was 150, 200 miles furthest from Earth during an Apollo mission. So he has a road trip of almost 500,000 miles. So goofy stuff like that. But I've seen my peers that I respect come up with crazy stuff like that. Like once again, Sacco of the Broncos told the Yankees this stat at one point that more men had walked on the moon than Mario Rivera allowed earned runs in the postseason. Oh. It was like 12-11.
That's crazy.
And the Yankees soaked that up because that's a pretty cool note.
That is.
So you take your creativity, you take whatever you specialize in, because I firmly believe everybody in this business excels and is at the top in something we do. Me, I can say that's statistics. Others, it might be their writing ability. I'm a good to above average writer, but I'm not great. The other SIDs may have come from a writing background or sprung from newspapers. They're going to be better writers. So might be people better at photoshopping or graphics or whatever you do in this business, you know, relationships with the media. It's probably 50, 60 different things you can pluck or responsible for and see what you're good at and what you're average at. So I think that's what it comes down to, is how and the respect you get from building good relationships.
Well, considering how many prior students have gone through your training to go on to success in the world of PR, sports PR and sports information, I think that's something you can look back on too and take a lot of pride from as well.
Definitely, definitely.
Well, thank you, David. This has been fantastic. So much information that you're sharing is so helpful to everyone in our audience. Congratulations on the Hall of Fame and the Lifetime Achievement Award. It sounds like it's been really well earned. Congratulations again.
Well, like I say, it comes with age, but it also comes with doing due diligence in the profession that you pick. And I kind of do feel that I have done that. So thanks for having me on, Brian. Much appreciated.
Massive thanks to David Plotty for coming on the show. I think that was my first Hall of Famer. I'm pretty proud about that. Thanks to David for sharing such incredible career advice. And if you haven't been to a game, a football game at University of Colorado, do it. Boulder is an incredible city. When we lived in Colorado, and we lived there for about 3 years, I wanted in the worst way to buy a house in Boulder, because that small college, well, not small college, but that college kind of town, small city, is just got a great vibe to it. Really interesting place. But unfortunately, we couldn't afford it. We just visited on the weekends. But game days and farmers markets are awesome in that small city. So check it out. Thanks for listening, everybody. Please subscribe to the show, share with friends, give us a great review wherever you can listen, and get back to work. Yeah, this one. And was recently given a Lifetime Achievement Award by the Football Writers Association of America and enshrined in the Hall of Fame at COSITA, the College Sports Information Directors Association. Three, two,